stand here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest, and our guest this evening is Dr. Boyd Haley, who is a professor of chemistry at the University of Kentucky. Until recently, he was the chairman of the department there, and he's done a great deal of fascinating research on the physiological effect of mercury on the human brain, specifically its relationship to Alzheimer's disease. Now, it is very interesting. If you look and see what's happening, the incidence of cancer is rising in America. The incidence of diabetes and heart disease is rising in America. But the incidence of Alzheimer's disease is dramatically rising in America. The government insists that they have no idea what this is happening, but they're going, of course, to find out, and they're going to fund the research. But Dr. Haley has been working on this subject for some years and has done some seminal and fundamental work on the issue of the relationship between mercury and dental amalgams and the incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And interestingly enough, apparently, the government has cut off the funding from the NIH for anyone looking into the background of the relationship between Alzheimer's disease and mercury. Now, why would that be? Certainly, there's a great deal of scientific evidence to point to a relationship. Why would the NIH cut off funding? Dr. Haley, why is that? Certainly, you're on the front lines of this battle, and you know other scientists who've been doing similar work.
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like it's a personal issue against Boyd Haley. Anyone can go to the CRISP database system, at the National Institutes of Health, and try to find grants that are funded that look at the toxicity of the mercury released from dental amalgams and their possible association with any neurological disease. And what you'll find is that all the research that has been funded and given to dental schools who are not qualified to do this type of research. And the research that they publish is essentially nothing. When the dentist or the ADA try to defend dental amalgams, they'll say there has been no conclusive epidemiological study done showing that amalgams are associated with any neurological disease. And they're right, except there's none been done to show that they're safe either. It's sort of like the cigarette tobacco, the tobacco company argument. If we don't do any research that shows anything, then we can just ignore it. However, the basic science, and this is what your listening audience will know, mercury, and only mercury, will mimic the same aberrant biochemistry you see in an Alzheimer's disease brain, and mercury and only mercury will produce the diagnostic hallmarks of the disease, as people have seen. So, if this were any other material, you would see, everybody getting excited about it. Part of the reason we don't have support is, number one, there is no pharmaceutical money to be made by eliminating exposure to mercury. I mean, all you do is get rid of it, I wouldn't say the entire problem of Alzheimer's disease is corrected, but a major part of it is that there is no money. Plus, our Food and Drug Administration has routinely, over the last 20 years, refused to investigate amalgams for the amount of mercury they release. Even though you can show them a film of mercury vapor pouring off of a dental amalgam, they still refuse to test it. So our own government is the one who's been worst at compromising this terrible situation.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes. This is a subject which I really think that everyone in the listening audience should look into. When I first heard this, and I'll have to admit it was 25 years ago, I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard of. And then as I began thinking about it, going over my 35 years or so of practicing medicine, I began gradually to say, well, maybe there is something to this. And now, of course, as I've looked into it in much greater detail, I can tell you this is something that you should be concerned about for yourself and your family. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Boyd Haley. Dr. Haley, now, of course, you'd been doing research. Had you been doing research on the fillings? We know you'd been doing the research on the relationship between mercury and Alzheimer's disease. Had you done anything at all on certainly the release of mercury from fillings?
I didn't at the start because, I was one of these people that was as naive as you said, just as you were. I couldn't believe that the Food and Drug Administration or the American Dental Association would tell me that mercury didn't come off of amalgams, or that if it did, it was just so low that it couldn't have any effect. And, I'm a kind of person that believes what the government says most of the time, or at least I used to be. But I published this work, and I showed that mercury mimicked the aberrant biochemistry, and no one's ever said I'm wrong. I mean, that's one thing the audience said. No one has put up and said, no, Dr. Haley's research is all wrong. If you're going to shoot down what I do, you publish it. You publish, we did his experiments, and here's the reason he's wrong, and that's never been done. And this was done back in 1988 and 90, up to about 92, when I published a lot of that original work. Now, the thing is, when I was invited to give a talk to a group called the International Academy of Oral and Medical Toxicology. This is a group of dentists and physicians who think that exposure to mercury from dentistry and medicine is one of the major causes of neurological diseases. And when they told me that, I thought I had landed in the loony bin. But they brought out, a mercury vapor sniffer, the same one that OSHA uses to shut down labs in my chemistry department if we have a mercury spill. And they had me do the work, and I went there. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I still didn't believe them. And so I went back to my lab, and I got the University of Kentucky's mercury vapor sniffer, and the more I looked at this and the more I walked around with it, it turned out, this is extremely simple experiments to do to measure mercury coming off of an amalgam filling. It is freshman-level chemistry to do it and do it right. I mean, in other words, you can train a student to do it, and I have trained students to do it. And what I found was just blew my mind. The amount of mercury coming off of dental amalgams is dramatically, hundreds of times higher than what the ADA experts or spokespeople estimate. And why they're covering this up and why they keep, and they, what they do is they just out-PR you. They don't publish anything. I mean, I defy anybody here to find a paper produced by anyone in a dental school that has absolutely measured the amount of mercury coming off of a dental amalgam by a direct scientific procedure. What they do is they measure the amount in the urine, and then they make an estimate with a whole bunch of assumptions and estimates, etc., which are just pure smoke and mirrors.
Hold that thought there for just a minute as we bring our other stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening for the first hour, Dr. Boyd Haley, a professor of chemistry at the University of Kentucky, and he began doing research in the relationship between mercury and Alzheimer's disease back in 1988, 1962, and then he was invited to a meeting of people who were interested in medical and oral toxicology, and they convinced him that the mercury was being actually vented from the fillings that we have in our mouth, and of course, Dr. Haley, like myself, thought that was pretty foolish until they began to use tests, and there are something called mercury sniffers, some sort of an apparatus that can actually determine the amount of mercury that's coming off. And they found, actually, of course, you could actually measure the mercury being vented, especially when you chewed or when you drank something hot. And we have a constant source of one of the most toxic substances in the whole world, specifically neurotoxic, brain toxic, in our mouths. And many, many people have all sorts of fillings there. And of course, anybody who suggests that you're getting mercury toxicity from that, they say, those isn't mercury, those are silver fillings. Well, how do you address that when they insist that they're silver fillings?
Well, that's the biggest deception going. I mean, the amalgam fillings are 20% silver, but they're 50% mercury on average. And the amount the amount of mercury that they release is dramatically, like I said, elevated than before. And one reason you know I'm right, Stan, is that if I were wrong, don't you think that the ADA, with all the money it has, couldn't go out and round up, 10, 15 other chairs or prominent chemists in the country to say, Boyd Haley's nuts, Boyd Haley's totally wrong, we measured this, and he's wrong, he's making an inaccurate statement. Well, they can't find those people. those people aren't going to lie. They're not going to perjure themselves in something that's going to set their reputations, you know, in history as apologists for something that doesn't happen. They're not so you don't see that. Now, who do they get to say? They get the Consumer Reports, who get their they get the Alzheimer's Association, which isn't a scientific group at all. It's a group of people that are fundraisers to say, well, we don't think there's any sign that it's been associated with this. Well, they're right. No one's done the research because the NIH won't fund that kind of research.
Now, certainly there are other chemists who have done some research on the relationship between mercury and brain toxicity, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. The literature is filled with studies proving that mercury is a tremendous neurotoxin. Most of the work done on animals. There is absolutely no doubt that if you expose a rat to mercury vapor for any period of time, the rat will become sick, neurotic, and have neurological disorders. And yet, we say, well, putting it in a human, when it comes out into a human, it can't do that. But the bottom line is, you know, there's going to be somewhere between 8 and 10% of the American population is going to end up demented from Alzheimer's disease. And you're going to tell me that having a constant, daily, minute-by-minute exposure to mercury in your mouth of a vapor, which is the one that penetrates the body the easiest, that's not going to push you across that thin red line into dementia quicker? I mean, that's absurd thinking.
Now, haven't they actually taken sheep and put
yes,
mercury fillings into those sheep? And what happened when they did that?
Well, within a few days, they found mercury spread throughout the body, concentrating a lot. A lot of it was concentrated in the jawbone, but there was a significant amount in the liver, the kidney, and the brain.
And so there's no question at all that the fumes do come off there, and certainly there are a number of websites up there where you can actually see the smoking tooth, and it's really very, very impressive. And where can people who are out there in the listening audience who are skeptical about this see the smoking tooth? In other words, it's a tooth where you can actually see the fumes coming off with some sort of a special filter.
Well, it's a simple chemistry trick that is used to teach students the concepts of spectroscopy. And what you do is you use a fluorescent screen, you turn out all the lights so you can't see anything, and then instead of turning on a regular visible light, you shine a mercury lamp on this mercury amalgam filling. It's a mercury vapor lamp, and that lamp, mercury generates a wavelength of light that's absorbed by mercury atoms, and so you can see the vapor coming off. And this is what is most maddening to someone like myself. You know, we've shown this in front of Congress. We put it on, different websites. The IAOMT group that I talked about earlier has it on their website. Uninformed Consent, another good website, shows that it's on there. And yet with this visual evidence, you can't possibly miss it. And, you can see it, and you can take a vapor sniffer and stick it in that vapor fume coming off and prove that it's mercury. In spite of all of that, the Food and Drug Administration still refuses to initiate a study on how much mercury comes off of amalgams. They would rather let the American people sit there and swallow this stuff and breathe it for the rest of their lives and die, rather than form something that might say maybe we should remove all amalgams from the mouths of people, or give the insurance companies a break, or at least have people who need new fillings put in to prevent them from getting the ones that contain mercury. It's a mistreatment of the American public, without a doubt.
Well, I know that in some states, if a dentist tells their patients that mercury is toxic and those mercury fillings ought to be taken out, they can actually lose their license in some states. Isn't that true?
I wouldn't say some states. I would say all states. The only one that has broken that is they call that the gag order. And, in Connecticut, they kind of said that the people have the right to make that statement. Dentists have the right. But no, your dentist, I can stand here as a scientist and tell you the truth, that mercury is neurotoxic. Mercury comes off of dental amalgams. As a matter of fact, the World Health Organization and everyone who's done any scientific studies on human mercury body burden will tell you that dental amalgams are the major contributor to your body burden. But if a dentist says that, tells the truth, uses his freedom of speech, the dental boards will try to take his license. They have done that routinely. I know. I've testified for these dentists in many, many cases.
And, it was very interesting. I had my my last amalgams taken out recently by a dentist who really was trained and knew exactly what he was doing. And personal friend, and we had all the inflatable dam and all the things that you do. You know, I'm just laying there and really enjoying myself. You know, and until it came time to take down the dam, the inflatable dam they had in the back of my throat to keep me from, you know, getting into the fumes. And they no sooner took that down, there was just like this terrible rush. My heart began to beat, you know, at, 120 beats a minute. It only lasted maybe for a minute or so, but this tremendous response to, you know, they'd sucked out my mouth and washed out my mouth and done everything imaginable to get rid of the mercury that, you know, fumes that had come from taking all those dental amalgams. And suddenly I get this tremendous rush of toxicity. You know, the last thing I was expecting, you know, I wasn't expecting anything at all. I was just really enjoying the whole process until that happened. And I suddenly realized the tremendous influence that the mercury has.
Well, you know, I deal in scientific fact, and I hear stories like you're talking about all the time. But the one fact is that in the disease called idiopathic dilated cardiomyopathy, that's the disease that, you know, is the cause for the need for most heart transplants, and the disease where these young athletes, you know, in the prime of their life, drop dead. Those people have 22,000 times more mercury in their heart tissue than people who die of other forms of cardiovascular disease. And then you have to say, well, why is the mercury collecting in the heart tissue, and where does that mercury come from? Well, you know, this happens to people throughout the United States. I mean, North Dakota, you know, as well as some of the inner cities. And these people aren't eating fish, not sea fish. They're not big shark consumers. And so there is no doubt. And this was published in 1999. No one's ever refuted that study. I mean, because that would be hard to do. I mean, that's a bolus. That's a huge amount of mercury. And if it were one-tenth that, you would be concerned. Yet our National Institutes of Health has not put out a request for proposals to study this issue at all. And that was 6 years ago it was published. And so here we have, you know, a major find about one of the major killers of American people, cardiomyopathies, that are elevated with mercury, I mean dramatically, 22,000 times more. And yet our government and our medical associations absolutely put no emphasis on studying this.
That's really disturbing, because we really depend upon, you know, the government agencies to investigate things to protect our health. And I think the average doctor, if he ever stopped and thought about this, if he even knew about this, would be very concerned. But this is not the sort of thing you're going to read in the medical journals that the pediatricians or the average physician or the average orthopedic surgeon like I was would be reading. These would be probably more in specialty journals, wouldn't they?
Well, this was in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology.
Right.
I would think a lot of them would see that. I would think somewhere along the line it would be brought to the attention. I mean, why do you do research and why do you publish it if somewhere along the line when you have such a dramatic find that somebody doesn't pick it up and go after it? I think if it were anything else that they had found there, it would have been supported. But I'm telling you, I mean, I'm not a kook that goes around believing in conspiracy theories or anything like that. But when I look at the total lack of mercury studies, you know, with regard to, you know, exacerbating illnesses in this country versus what I see in places like Sweden, Japan and Switzerland, then you begin to realize, you know, there is some element in our government, and, you know, and I don't think it's anybody trying to destroy the American population. What it is, a bunch of, you know, pea-brained bureaucrats have made a big mistake over the years, and they certainly don't want the American people to know that they didn't do their job of protecting, you know, us from the exposure to, you know, one of the most neurotoxic materials known to man.
Well, of course, you mentioned Sweden. I think for our listeners, they need to know that in Sweden, where they have free health care, it's all paid for by the government. The government there will not pay for, putting in a mercury filling, but they will pay for taking it out and replacing it with a ceramic or some other filling, because they know how neurotoxic it is. How come the Swedish people are so much smarter than the American people, and the Swedish dentists and Swedish physicians are so much smarter than American physicians? What do they know in Sweden where they will not allow that to be put in, and they will not pay for it to be put in, but they will pay to take them out because they're toxic? We'll be back here in just a moment or two, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, you're responsible for your health and your family's health. Be back in just a moment with Dr. Boyd Haling, a professor of chemistry, University of Kentucky. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Dr. Boyd Haley. And, you know, as we look and see this whole incredible unfolding story, and it should be very, very obvious that you would never actually take mercury. We're told we should be so concerned about eating fish because it has mercury in it. Or we're told that we can't have thermometers because at least the old-fashioned kind with mercury in it, because mercury is so toxic, and if you were to break with thermometer, and yet, of course, we'll put it in people's mouths. We'll put it in the vaccines we're giving to the elderly. Elderly people encouraged to get their influenza vaccines, which have extremely toxic doses far above the maximum allowed by the Environmental Protection Agency. And they're also giving it to a six-month-old children. The government insists that they all need to get that mercury shot. I mean, the influenza shot with the toxic doses of mercury in it. So there's so many things that just don't make sense as we see these things unfolding. Now, as far as you've actually done studies, and you can actually demonstrate, in tissue culture, the effect of mercury on neurons, can't you?
Yes, we've done that, and the thimerosal, or the preservative they've used in vaccine, is lethal to neurons in culture at exceptionally low concentrations. It's probably one of the most neurotoxic compounds that anyone can imagine. And I would point out to the audience that, for a child to be able to take, or an adult to be able to take, a single shot containing thimerosal as a preservative safely, according to EPA standards, they would have to weigh 275 pounds. These, what it is that the vaccine board of the CDC and the FDA have totally ignored the science. The EPA safe level was determined by groups of toxicologists, physiologists, medical doctors, biochemists, people who are expert in toxicology. And they set this limit. And the people who decide to ignore that at the CDC are what I call physician administrators, or at the best, epidemiologists, who really don't understand the tenets and the mechanisms of toxicology. And they ignore the science, and yet they claim that they're the scientists and that we're the ones that are kind of haywire, and yet everything has been published says the thimerosal is an exceptionally toxic compound and shouldn't be used in vaccines. And in fact, the Russians, quit using it in the 1980s. The veterinarians in this country took it out of the vaccines in 1992 because it was killing the dogs when they gave them too many shots. And yet we decided in 1985 that we would inject it into newborn babies. And that's what caused the advent of autism in this country. And, I'm more and more confident of that now because we've been looking. And the thing, they have taken the thimerosal out of the vaccines.
Except for the influenza vaccine.
Yes, except for the influenza, right. And so if they were right, if they are right, and yet the CDC and the FDA and these American Academy of Pediatricians says there's absolutely no proof and no connection to thimerosal with the autism epidemic, I think they're full of crap, to be as blunt as I can be, because there is everything that indicates that, all the biological toxicology, etc. But if they, so let's say they're right, let's say there isn't anything, then we really need to be alarmed, because if the rate of autism keeps going up like it is now, this country is going to be intellectually and economically bankrupt because of all the neurological problems we're having with our children. According to the CDC, one out of every six children has a neurodevelopmental disorder.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment, Dr. Haley. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and the guest this evening, Professor Boyd Haley, Professor of Chemistry at the University of Kentucky. And Professor Haley was simply pointing out that certainly the Russians took the thimerosal out of their vaccines in the 1980s. The veterinarians here in the United States took the thimerosal out of the vaccines being given to animals because it was harming the animals. And yet in 1985, why the CDC recommended that we start giving children in the nursery the first day of life toxic doses of mercury at 87 times the maximum allowable amount allowed by their body weight. Now, why would you do anything that foolish unintentionally? And, of course, it was about that time we really got the skyrocketing rates of autism. As Professor Haley said, the CDC has admitted that one in six American children has a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality. one in six children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality or behavioral abnormality. Now, where does it come from? Well, the CDC says they have no idea, but they can assure you it is not from the mercury. So, but they've gone ahead now and they've taken the mercury out of our childhood vaccines. Well, if there's nothing wrong with it, why did they take it out? And if there was something wrong with it, why are we leaving it in the vaccines we're giving all throughout the rest of the world? Why do they insist that children 6 months of age should get a toxic dose of mercury in the influenza vaccine? Professor Haley says you'd have to be, how heavy, 270 pounds to...
75 pounds to take it and meet EPA standards. 12 and a half micrograms, you know, according to EPA standards, you have to weigh 275 pounds for it to be safe.
All right. Somebody had called in and asked about getting our mercury fillings out. Do you think the people ought to get their mercury fillings out?
I think it's, that's an individual basis. Depends on your age, your family history. I think any family, anybody that's from a family history that has Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, or neurodevelopmental disorders, some of them that you think that might be indicated genetic susceptibility, I would get them out. I would do it even if they didn't, because my wife and I have had all of ours removed. We had them all removed from our children when we first saw my research. I couldn't believe how much mercury people were exposed to. So, yes, I think they ought not run out and just have, their average Joe Dennis do it. They ought to go to someone who's taken lessons on how to remove amalgam fillings and without giving a lot of exposure, bolus mercury exposure to the patient.
And I certainly agree with that, and I think you have to go. In fact, this organization you mentioned, the IAOMT, International Association of Oral and Medical Toxicology, I think they have lists of dentists who have actually been trained in this, and you can go to their website. It's, .com or .org?
.org. They do run classes based on the science that's been published on the, in Sweden, they did a lot of studies where they would measure the blood mercury levels before and after dental amalgam removal and show that the blood levels would go up dramatically on the removal. Of course, when you grind on those fillings and it's a high-speed drill, you release a lot more mercury vapor than when it's just sitting, quietly.
Now, my understanding is that, there are all sorts of rules and regulations what you're supposed to do with that mercury when it comes out. Now, it's perfectly all right to put it in people, but once it's taken out of the individual, then it's suddenly considered very toxic. Aren't there all sorts of OSHA rules and regulations on the disposal of this terribly toxic mercury we just took out of people's mouths?
Yes. This is part of the idiocy of this situation. An amalgam filling outside the mouth is considered a toxic waste. The dentist is required to put it in a sealed container under liquid glycerin containing reducing solution to keep the mercury vapor from coming off of that amalgam and raising the mercury area level in the room. That's because OSHA is in control. But when it's put in your mouth, then the dentists are in control, and it becomes more dentistry and medicine, and OSHA has no prerogative there, so they can't say, you can't put it in people's mouth. But they can tell you that you can't leave it set out on the top of a table in a room. There's a level of human stupidity that's just unbelievable with regard to the way we treat toxic exposures, in the environment versus toxic exposures from doctors and dentists.
And, of course, the dentist comes under tremendous contact with the mercury, as does the dental assistant. And my understanding, is that first of all, that the highest rate of suicide among any profession is among dentists. And does that have anything to do with the fact that the toxicity of the brain? We know that certainly people who work with mercury, like hatters, they became mad as a hatter. It's well known, the toxicity of mercury, and that even dental assistants, that I've read some studies. Have you ever read any studies that suggested dental assistants had a higher rate of miscarriage or difficulty getting pregnant?
I have heard that presented in talks, by other people, where they've done studies on dental assistants being unable to get pregnant, and only after they quit working in the dental office do they become pregnant.
Hold that stuff right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Professor Boyd Haley, and we're talking already about what's happening as far as mercury, but we're talking about dental fillings, we're talking about the toxicity of mercury on the brain. And now, aren't there some people who are much more susceptible to mercury toxicity than others? Is that the reason why everybody with the dental fillings doesn't get Alzheimer's disease?
Yes, I mean, you know what? What the research is coming out and demonstrating now is that there's a subset of the population that don't effectively excrete mercury. And when people say they're surprised at that, they shouldn't be. Anybody that knows anything about the history or the science of toxicology knows that there's always a subset or a certain genetic susceptibility to toxicity with anything. For example, if you go back to acroedenia or pink disease, where children developed symptoms similar to autism, not identical, but, you know, somewhat similar, it was caused by mercury and teething powders. It was about 1 out of 500 kids that got that. If you want a better, a more vivid description, you know, if you take Alaskan natives and you give them a beer, they can't detox alcohol, so they get drunk, you know, very easily on a small amount of alcohol, say, compared to an Irishman like myself. So, and it's not that they're mutants, it's their genetic susceptibility is quite high, or they cannot detox as effectively. And thalidomide was the same thing. Of the thousands of mothers that took that, only a very small percentage had children that were deformed. But yet, it just points out that, you know, we have to look at these low-level, you know, susceptible populations and prevent them from being exposed to these very toxic materials.
Well, I think really what's so frightening is this figure that the CDC has put out about 1 in 6 children in America, the United States today, has a neurodevelopmental abnormality or a behavioral abnormality. You know, this is really much different. It wasn't like this a generation ago, was it?
No, it wasn't. I mean, you know, they want to argue, and people want to, you know, who want to, you know, confuse the issue and say there's nothing happening, saying that we're just doing a better job of diagnosing this now. And I, you know, missing an autistic child is like missing a train wreck. And I'd like to say, well, where did all these autistic children that we misdiagnosed, where did they go? I mean, these people would be in their, you know, their 20s now, and they would be running around the community causing all kinds of havoc and be very noticeable, and they're just not there. I mean, so that's, a very, you know, it's just an unimaginative attempt to cover up what happened.
You know, when I graduated from medical school, I'd never heard of autism. I didn't hear it until in recent years, you know, because we didn't have a lot of the diseases when I was going to medical school that we exist today. It wasn't we didn't recognize them. It was that they didn't exist. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we've got Bill calling from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. We'll take his call in just a moment. But I think it's so vitally important that our listeners understand that these are very, very toxic substances, that mercury is very toxic, and yet knowing full well that the toxicity of the mercury and influenza vaccines, why the CDC is recommending that pregnant women will take a influenza shot with the full dose of mercury in it. Now, what effect will that have on the unborn child?
Well, you know, Stan, this is one point, piece of research, and this shows you the lack of thought and the callousness or the lack of concern by the CDC and the people who push vaccines at all costs. In 1977, there was a publication, came from a hospital in Toronto, where they treated 13 children with umbilical cord infections. Part of the treatment was to take methylate, which is a thimerosal-containing topological material, tincture, and put it on their umbilical cords. And people who were old enough will remember it was red, and you painted it on cuts, etc. And a lot of people used this and didn't get sick. But when you put it on the umbilical cord of these children, they killed 10 of 13. And there's only a retrospective study where they found out that these children were killed with mercury toxicity. That was published in 1977, and yet these Einsteins that run the vaccine program decided it was okay to inject that very same toxin into day-old infants, in people on the day of birth, at levels that vastly exceeded the EPA guidelines. You see, that's part of the reason they fight so hard, is because I think that they probably don't sleep well at night. They probably feel guilty, and what they did was really criminal, because we pay them not to make vaccines. We pay them to make safe vaccines, and they didn't do that. Matter of fact, they did no safety testing before they put into the bodies of these infants a material that absolutely, you know, throughout science, for many, many years, even back in the 1940s, they were saying it was too toxic to put in children. In American publications, in American scientific journals, and the vaccine board and the FDA and the CDC have totally ignored that science. And they, as a matter of fact, they're even worse than that. They say it doesn't exist, and yet anybody that can get on Medline and knows how to do a scientific search can find these papers. You know, I think these people, you know, have done behaviors that I would consider criminal.
And, Chris, when there were hearings in Washington, D.C., it's my understanding that Congressman Dan Burton, who feels very strongly about this because one of his grandchildren is autistic, he asked the man from the CDC, well, why is it that it's this thymer aerosol is too toxic to put on the skin, so you've outlawed it from putting it on the skin, but it's all right to inject into children? And I don't think he knew the answer to that question, did he?
There is no answer.
There's,
I mean, there's no good answer, except you have to turn a blind eye. And what it is the vaccine board, I think, was doing whatever it could to help the pharmaceutical company sell every vaccine possible. And I don't know if you're aware of the latest research that's coming out, I mean, where people have looked at the efficacy of these influenza shots for older people and children. They don't even work.
They don't even work, so we've been giving it to these people, and yet, of course, Dr. Pudenberg is a dean of vaccinologists, and any of you out there in the listening audience who are skeptics, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. We'll give you the reference to his webpage and what it says on his webpage. If you are between the ages of 60 and 65, and you take, over a five-year period, three or four vaccine shots, 10 years down the line, the incidence of Alzheimer's disease goes up 1,000%. Now, why would we still be recommending that if the latest studies suggest it really doesn't do much of any good anyway?
We don't have sane people in charge, and that, you know, of the vaccine program or you know, our disease prevention. I mean, I'm flabbergasted, and what bothers me the most is that our Congress seems absolutely incapable of responding to this. They seem to be more controlled by lobbyists than by common sense and by published science.
Well, I'm very, very deeply concerned about that, and I'm concerned now we've got at least it out of the childhood vaccines here in the United States, but what effect is this going to have in the children throughout the world? My understanding is that autism is appearing now in children all throughout the world in the underdeveloped areas where we are there giving them vaccine shots because we're so concerned about the children there. It's all about the children, but is it really about the children? Is it? Because if these children now who've never had autism before are developing it, now what is this possibly? There some other reason for what we're doing? Well, won't get into that as far as motivation is concerned. But the science shows, and Dr. Haley has certainly talked about this repeatedly. The science shows that tremendous toxicity of mercury. Is there anything that's really as neurotoxic as mercury is, as far as the brain is concerned?
You know, it would be, there are different types of mercury compounds. It would be very difficult for me. I mean, I am sure there are some toxins made by certain viruses or bacteria that could be more toxic, but your chances of running into them are very, very slim. There's nothing, you know, it is, you know, of the chemicals you're most likely to run into, there is nothing nearly as toxic or neurotoxic as mercury and mercury compounds.
Now, we've heard for many years that Alzheimer's disease was related to aluminum. What part does aluminum play, or does it play any significant part in Alzheimer's disease?
Well, when we were looking at the toxicity of thimerosal to neurons in culture, when we put in aluminum, the amount that's in the vaccine, because the aluminum's in the vaccines also at a higher concentration than thimerosal, when we did that, the aluminum tremendously enhanced the toxicity of thimerosal. I mean, it was a major enhancement of the killing rate of neurons by having mercury. I mean, having aluminum and mercury together.
And so
aluminum alone, by the way, wasn't very toxic at all. The amount that we added, it was, you know, it was a very low amount. But when you added it with the thimerosal, it dramatically enhanced the toxicity of the thimerosal.
And so it's a synergistic effect, and a tragically synergistic or damaging effect. And so the aluminum by itself wasn't that bad, but when you added it to the effect of the mercury, why a dramatic increase in the destruction of those neurons. And actually, there are videos that actually show this. You can actually see some of the scientific studies that have been done and have been certainly available. And one video we carry called a mercury, it's called Mercury a Slow Death. It's put out by a group called uninformedconsent.com. That's uninformedconsent.com. Where would you suggest that our listeners go on the internet to get good information on the subject we're talking about? Because, you know, most people have access to the internet. But it doesn't do any good to just look at that computer. Here is the opportunity to get the information you need to find out if this is really true. So where would you suggest that they go?
Okay, well, if they're interested in the autism issue, the Defeat Autism Now, and it's called dan.org is a good site, as well as Safe Minds, SAFEMINDS.org. And on that, there'll be hyperlinks to everything important. If you're talking about dental amalgams, there are so many sites that show, mercury toxicity and give the information on that that one can get into. We have that at our site at altcorp.com.
altcorp.com. That's altcorp.com.
And there will be hyperlinks there. Again, the IAOMT website is one that's a very highly maintained website that talks about mercury toxicity from dental amalgams and the problems that are coming up with it. And that's the one I would really suggest. But there are toxictooth.org. The American public and the Internet is probably a better source of and more accurate source of information than the FDA. Of course, if you go to the American Dental Association website, you'll see that they'll say it's totally safe. There is nothing further from the truth.
Well, I think it's really tragic that the American people are not getting the truth about this. So I think we'll go ahead and open up our lines. If anybody's out there you'd like to call. Now, if you're listening on the Here's Help Network a couple of weeks from now, and we'll be broadcasting this, why, don't bother to call in. But if you're here this evening, this is the 26th of September when we're doing this live program, why, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or at 464-8295 if you have a question or comment for Dr. Boyd Haley, because this is such a subject that really impacts on the majority of the American people, because I would say probably the majority of the American people do have these mercury fillings and these toxic mercury fillings that are constantly venting the mercury vapors. And you can actually see pictures certainly at the uninformedconsent.org website of that tooth that's actually what sort of a shield is that, or what is that, a mercury lamp of some sort that where you can actually see the fumes coming off?
You have to have what is called a fluorescent screen behind it, and it's just it's really a thin layer chromatography plate that has fluorescent indicator on it, so you can see the fluorescence from the absorption. And the lamp you shine on the amalgam filling is actually a mercury vapor lamp. It's a blue lamp. A lot of people see those around. They're very common in research laboratories.
And of course, really, mercury is one of the most toxic substances known to mankind. And yet, so why are we putting it in the vaccines for the children? And why are we putting it in the vaccines for the elderly? And why are we putting it in the dental fillings? And if you made a mistake, why not admit it? Because the longer you go, the more harm that's going to be done. And certainly we know what's happening in Sweden. What's really happening throughout the rest of the world? Do you have any idea as far as dental fillings are concerned?
Most countries have severe restrictions, recommending that you not place amalgam fillings in any female that's going to be of childbearing age, and that you not put it in children. I think, in reality, other than some third world countries, which I don't know what they think, I think the United States is the only major, what you call, first world country that says amalgam fillings are safe for everybody at all times. I mean, which I consider just kind of a preposterous sweeping of the issue under the carpet, And they win, Stan, because they have a lot more PR money and a lot more lobby money than people like yourself and me.
Well, at least we have a small voice, and there are a lot of small voices out there across the country, and they're the websites. We have the access to the Internet, and you can get the information on the Internet if you're out there in the listening audience. Going to those websites we talked about, and certainly what would people find if they went to your website, altcorp.com?
Well, you know, it's under dental information. And we have just, you know, really thousands of papers that refer to the toxicity of mercury at very low levels and the amount of mercury that comes off of amalgams, the toxicity of solutions in which amalgams have been soaked. And that's the one thing. You take an amalgam and put it in a mill of water, and then you wait a few hours, you take a mill of that water, you take an alkaloid and add it to cells or to enzymes in a tube, and you'll see a tremendous inhibition of that activity.
Now, you mean just take a tooth out with a filling in it and don't do anything to it, just put it in water and it'll get enough toxicity from that mercury within a few hours?
Right, and not only that, you can take that same water and run it through a mercury analyzer. I mean, a very sophisticated instrument, which I have one that costs about $50,000, and you can see that it's very high in mercury. And the thing that's the most critical is that in the AD brain, there's a protein called tubulin that's 80% dysfunctional. I mean, it's not viable. And if you take a normal brain homogen and you add, water in which an amalgam has been soaked for a couple hours, and you add an aliquot of that water, a very small amount of that water, to this normal brain homogenous, you'll make it look exactly like an AD brain with regard to the viability of this protein tubulin.
You're talking about an Alzheimer's brain?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
I mean, you add it to a normal brain, and you'll make it look like an Alzheimer's brain.
Oh, I see, okay. And these are things that the scientists have done. The science is all there. But the American people are not being told the science, and they don't want to believe that their dentist would lie to them. And the dentist is not intentionally lying. The doctors aren't intentionally lying. It is just that there's an organized effort to control what the doctors and dentists think, because they know that they will be able to influence their patients, and so they lie to them. Somebody's lying to them. Somebody's withholding the information, and that's why I think it's so vitally important why we keep coming back to this subject, that our listeners get informed. And they get to the doctors, they get to the dentists, and challenge them to do the research to find out, or get the papers, and you can certainly get them on Dr. Haley's website and these other websites we've talked about. Get the information, and then help to get that out across America. Because, of course, as the incidence of Alzheimer's disease increases, why, what's going to happen to our population? What's going to happen to our health care and things of that sort, and simply caring for the people? Now, the interesting thing is, my understanding is that since they stopped putting the thimerosal in the childhood vaccines, and probably at the last batch was used up in the year 2003, that in the last couple of years, the incidence of new cases of Alzheimer's disease for the first time has begun to turn down. Have you heard that?
Yes, I've seen the data indicating that from California.
So that would certainly tend to confirm the fact that it was a causal relationship, or at least be strongly suggestive of the fact, unless, of course, parents are foolish enough to give their children, six-month-old children, an influenza shot.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just criminal for the CDC to recommend that. Especially, you have to ask yourself, why haven't these people done the efficacy studies that were just reported that came out of England and a couple other places, just saying these things are not effective. They do not prevent autism. I mean, pardon me, they do not prevent the flu. I mean, you're as likely to get the flu if you take the shot as if you are if you don't.
You're talking now, of course, as far as the influenza is concerned.
Yes.
Influenza shot. Okay, well, let's go to Bill, who's calling from Coeur d'Alene. He's been very patient. Bill, does you have a question for our guest?
Hi, Stan. Is there any supplement that you can give your child that can detoxify them from exposure to amalgam fillings they may have had during their childhood?
Well, have they had the amalgam films taken out?
Not yet.
All right. Well, of course, the thing. What would you respond to that, Dr. Haley?
Well, the main supplement they should be taking is selenium, because selenium is a necessary mineral for your body, And if you're selenium deficient, you'll have a lot of problems. And anybody that's carrying a mercury body burden is going to be, you know, deficient in selenium because the mercury and the selenium form the, you know, the tightest mercury binding complex that's known to man. And selenium, therefore, you know, while you need it, if you do take excess of it, will help remove the, not remove the toxic mercury, but it will bind to the mercury and render it much less toxic. So I would put them on a supplement. If they had a amalgam filling in their mouth, I would keep them on a daily supplement of selenium as recommended by the health food store or by some physician that you might meet with. I would also put them on a vitamin C supplement because vitamin C increases the level of reduced glutathione in your body. And glutathione is the natural molecule that binds to and removes mercury, you know, in the way that we were designed by the Creator to get rid of mercury from that. And it's been shown that the children that are affected adversely by low-level mercury exposures, like from dental amalgams and from vaccines, are children who have low levels of glutathione in their red cells.
Okay, thank you very much for calling, Bill. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, and of course, our guest this evening has been Professor Boyd Haley from the University of Kentucky. And of course, he has been researching this for, well, I guess, what, pretty close 15 years or more?
I like I tell people, I feel like I've been in an 18-year argument with a town drunk regarding this issue.
Hold on, we'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Roger calling. We'll get the last call in from Roger. Do you have a question for our guest this evening, Roger?
Yes, very quickly. You mentioned about the vapors coming off when you had your extraction, Dr. Stan. I may be wrong in guessing that you almost always have a vacuum just for air in your mouth.
Oh, yeah, sure. They vacuumed it, and they did all the right things. Vacuum, and they were squirting water in there. And the doctor who took my fillings out was very, very skilled. And still I got an initial toxic rush, which I wasn't expecting at all. Fortunately, it passed before very long. I don't think I've lost too many brain cells. Anything else you wanted to ask there,
well,
Roger?
On that note, I don't doubt the amount and toxicity of those vapors, but it's kind of hard to isolate on an individual level psychosomatic response or expectation.
Yes, it really can be, except I wasn't expecting anything. But thanks so much for calling, okay. Roger. Well, we've got about a minute to finish up the program, Dr. Haley. Actually, 2 minutes. What are your parting thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners this evening?
Well, you know, the way that we keep amalgam fillings active in the United States is through the lobbying efforts of the American Dental Association. And they get their money from supporting dentists, members of the American Dental Association who pay their dues. And I would just tell the American public, if your dentist is an ADA dentist, when you decide to pick a new dentist or select a dentist to do something, decide whether you want to support an institution, a trade organization, that believes it's their right to put toxic materials in the mouth of your mothers, your children, and your friends. And I would suggest you find a dentist that is mercury-free and does not pay dues to the American Dental Association, because that's the only thing they understand is being hit in the pocketbook.
And the other thing is, of course, I think that it behooves our listeners to get educated, to get the documentation, to get the books that are available, and we carry some of those, and get the tape sets and the videos, and go up on the Internet and get the scientific papers by Dr. Haley and by others, and get them to your dentist, and ask him, is it possible, we know you wouldn't want to hurt anybody intentionally, but is it just possible that maybe you've been misinformed? So I think that we're going to have to rely upon people across America to begin to educate the medical profession, because they're sure not getting a very good education from their professional organizations. Dr. Haley, it's always a pleasure having you here with us, and thank you so much for giving us another hour of your time.
You're welcome.
Good night, and God bless you, sir. Well, our guest this evening has been Dr. Boyd Haley, professor of chemistry at the University of Kentucky, for many years the chairman of the department there. He's in full-time research at the present time, trying to get the information out about how they're poisoning the American people. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, when we talk about these things, you may wonder, is there some sort of a common denominator behind everything that's going on? And of course, there really is. There's a spiritual battle going on in our society for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization, and I think we're under attack not only spiritually but physically as well. And those of you who have heard our programs will realize that water fluoridation is extremely toxic. And if you haven't read my newsletters on that, it's the November and December 2004 newsletters. That's November and December 2004. And you can get those newsletters by going to my website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com and pull them down. Or if you don't have access to the internet, we'll be glad to send you one of those newsletters, either one of them. One of them is a testimony given by Dr. Hersey, who is the vice president of the Union of the Environmental Protection Agency's scientists. Now, you did not allowed to hear, you were not told by the controlled media that within the last 2 months, the Environmental Protection Agency scientists have come forward with a statement that demanding we stop putting fluoride in the water because, of course, we're poisoning the American people. That was totally blocked out by the controlled media. In the same way that the stories about the mercury toxicity are being blocked out largely by the controlled media. In fact, it was probably 3 or 4 months ago, almost as if by order from someone. U.S. News and World Report, Newsweek, Time Magazine, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, all the major media, ABC, CBS, NBC, had articles on autism saying, oh, there's an epidemic of autism. But we want to assure you it's not mercury, and certainly don't get your child treated. And yet, of course, many of the children who've been treated for their autism with chelation and diet have made dramatic recoveries, and some of them are almost normal. Why would anybody want to hurt children? And I would simply ask you, why would anybody want to abort 40 million children? There's some people who want to destroy human life. There's some people who want partial birth abortion. And, of course, your tax money is being used to finance the population control agenda throughout the world. Please go to my website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And pull down my population control agenda monograph. It's available up there. You can, of course, get our tape sets and our videos on population control and genocide and the video, Nundare College Genocide. It's important you have access to the information and then help us to disseminate it across America. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. Our website, www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders. And we ask you to pray for our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. For those of you who are listening, we certainly want to remind you that we will be having our annual conference here in Santa Cruz on the 19th of November, all day long. And, of course, lunch will be served. So if you're interested in coming, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and right now we're not getting a response from our scheduled guests, so we're going to probably going to have open lines because I don't have anything really prepared. We were going to be talking this hour about the financial situation. I'm going to ask my producer just to keep trying to call our scheduled guests, but right now, of course, we're talking about really what's happening to America. You know, there is no incidence in all history where a nation has spent itself into prosperity, and yet, of course, it would appear that the people in Washington, D.C. want to do exactly that. And I think we have to go back and understand the foundation of our monetary system. And anybody who's ever studied the history of money knows that certainly down throughout history, time and time again, America and other countries have tried a monetary system that was based upon men managing the economy. It was Aristotle who said there's absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom and kings. There's nothing wrong with a fiat money system as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom and kings. And that's exactly what we're seeing today. Is there anybody who really thinks we have perfect authority and godlike wisdom and kings and the people who inhabit the White House? Aristotle based his writings upon what he'd seen happen in Greece, where they tried exactly what we're trying today. The same thing had happened in ancient Rome. It's happened dozens of times throughout history. And this is what motivated Alan Greenspan. Back in 1965, long before he ever became the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, to make the following statement. In the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from confiscation to inflation. There is no safe store of value. If there were, the government would have to make it holding illegal, as was done in the case of gold. The financial policy of the welfare state requires that there be no way for the owners of wealth to protect themselves. This is the shabby secret of the welfare state's tirade against gold. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for confiscation of wealth. Let me read that again. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for this confiscation of wealth. And ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what's going on today. We have massive deficit spending. And, of course, this is going to be used as a means of confiscating the wealth of the people who are listening to our program. Well, if you're out in the listening audience, why, we're going to have open lines. So give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And we'd love to have your thoughts on what's going on in the world economically. But it was on April 10th of this year, 2005, when Paul Volcker wrote an article for the Washington Post, and this is what he said. Under the placid surface, there are disturbing trends, huge imbalances, disequilibria, risks, call them what you will. Altogether, the circumstances seem to me as dangerous and intractable as any I can remember, and I can remember quite a lot. What really concerns me is that there seems to be so little willingness or capacity to do much about it. Personal savings in the United States have practically disappeared, and to be sure, businesses have begun to rebuild their financial reserves, but in the space of a few years, the federal deficit has come to offset the source of national savings. What holds it all together is a massive and growing flow of capital from abroad, running to more than $2 billion every working day and growing. More recently, we've become more dependent on foreign central banks, particularly in China and Japan and elsewhere in East Asia. The difficulty is that this seemingly comfortable pattern can't go on indefinitely. And we'll be back in just a moment to finish this up right here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I said, "Me, I'm our guest this evening. For some reason or other, didn't show up, so without a guest. So I'm going to ask you, if you're out in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And when we get back, of course, we'll go ahead complete that quotation from Paul Volcker, because I think it gives you tremendous insight into what's really going on in the world today. And let me simply point out that Paul Volcker was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board back in the 1980 period. He was chairman of the Federal Reserve Board for quite a time. And when we had the tremendous runaway inflation in the late 1970s, why, he did what should have been done. He raised the interest rates up to almost over 20%. Inflation was running about 18%. He got interest rates up to over 20%, and he really stopped the inflation at that time. Paul Volcker is a member of the establishment that really runs the world. He's part of certainly the central banking fraternity. And when our friend Joan Vian was over at the last meeting, I guess it was about a year ago, of the central bankers at the World Central Bank, and that's the meeting of the International Monetary Fund, in Basel, Switzerland, a Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland. She had a chance to talk to Paul Volcker. And he attends these meetings on a regular basis. He's one of the central bankers, central banks. He spent a long time working for the Chase Manhattan Bank. Paul Volcker certainly has spent a great deal of time as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is America's invisible government. And if you don't really believe that, we have a wonderful quotation, and we'll make it available to any of our listeners. It was Mr. Wolfensohn, who just left the position as the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank, pardon me, the World Bank, at David Rockefeller's 90th birthday. And he said, somebody has to run the world. It's really being run by the people. Here at the Council on Foreign Relations, and, you know, where would the world be if we didn't have people like us running the world? Now, that's Wolfensohn just recently gave up his position as president of the World Bank, addressing the Council on Foreign Relations and simply saying that the world is being run by the people in the Council on Foreign Relations as it is, and certainly Paul Volcker is one of those people. So when we get back here in just a moment, we're going to continue and tell you the rest of what Paul Volcker wrote on the 10th of August this year in the Washington Post, which is part of the internationalist movement. Well, I was reading from a statement by Paul Volcker, and this is what he said. The difficulty is that this seemingly comfortable pattern can't go on indefinitely. Of course, he's speaking of what's going on in the world, where we are borrowing $2 billion every day from foreign countries just to try to maintain our balance of payments. And Paul Volcker said, I don't know of any country that has managed to consume and invest 6% more than it produces for long. The United States is absorbing about 80% of the net flow of international capital. And at some point, both central banks and private institutions will have their fill of dollars. I don't know whether this change will come with a bang or a whimper, whether sooner or later. But as things stand, it's more likely than not that it will be a financial crisis rather than policy foresight that will force the change. A wise observer of the economic scene once commented that what can be left to later usually is, and then alas, it's too late. I don't want to let stand as the epitaph of what has been an unparalleled period of success for the American economy, that of enormous potential for the world at large. And basically, he's saying he anticipates an economic crisis. Well, our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got Bruce calling us from Santa Cruz, and if you'd like to call in from across the nation, this is going to be open lines, although we'll try to talk about the oil crisis, we'll talk about financial affairs, but if you have something you'd like to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. Hi, Bruce, how are you doing?
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I hope you're well as well.
I am too. What did you want to talk about?
I share your disdain for the monetary system, but I worry that gold is is perhaps a false hope.
All right, fine.
The value of our money is pretty much the value of our food and services, our intellect. Gold, you know, you can starve with a gold coin.
Why do you say that?
Well, gold is an artificial idea of wealth, where food and your intellect, your knowledge is real wealth.
Do you think we should ignore then the history of the past, what happened in ancient Greece, what happened in ancient Rome, what happened in Germany, what happened in Russia, what happened in Argentina recently?
Well, not at all. I agree that this deficit monetary system is a fraud.
What should we tie the monetary system to? What should it be?
I like the continental dollar worked well. The original dollar that our founding fathers originally used before the Federal Reserve central bank started.
So
that first continental dollar worked real well.
Well, it worked initially when it was first printed. All of the monetary systems based upon paper worked well initially. Then, if it worked so well, why was there a phrase that came to be used in the colonies, it wasn't worth the continental? Are you acquainted with that that phrase?
Yeah. During the war years, Congress didn't back up their promises to the farmers who had loaned their goods, sold their food to the army based on the promise they would then, you know, be paid. And of course the government abrogated that.
And of course that's exactly what happens. In fact, that's what's always has happened down throughout the history, is that there's nothing wrong with fiat money, as Aristotle said, as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom and kings. But during the Revolutionary War, when the continental dollar was, of course, the medium of exchange, why the government printed more dollars than it should, and eventually, as they increased the number of dollars, continental dollars in circulation, why the value plummeted, because there was really nothing behind it. It was redeemable and absolutely nothing. And eventually it came to be equated with this concept of no value at all. And the phrase was, it isn't worth the continentals.
They stopped accepting it for taxes. Our own government stopped, I believe, accepting it.
Because it wasn't worth anything. It had no value.
But gold won't help either.
Oh, it won't help? I mean, gold has been around for 5,000 years. I will tell you, you know, that throughout all history, the people, for instance, Germany, who had gold, you know, when the great inflation came, survived. The people who had money were wiped out. The Jews were able to sequester gold, and they, you know, sewn into their clothing. Some of them were able to get out of the country. And the same thing happened in Vietnam after the American government betrayed the people over there. The Vietnamese who had gold, some of them were able to get out to save their lives and their families. Gold has been a medium throughout all the centuries. Now, you may say, well, I'm much smarter than history is. And maybe you are. Maybe you are smarter than anybody else. But the whole idea that we will completely ignore what's happened down through the ages and say, oh no, of course, you know, gold is of no value. Gold is simply a medium of exchange.
Right.
And as long as men believe it's a medium of exchange, as long as it is something that is valued by men, you know, gold was valued by the ancient Egyptians. If you've ever been to the tombs in the Egyptian Museum in Cairo, well, you'll find out that there, you know, is a tremendous amount of gold there. Then that there's within the tombs. If you go into South America, where gold was used by the Aztecs and by the Incas and the Mayas, why do you think they all valued gold?
I believe it's beautiful, and it's certainly rare and difficult to acquire and produce, and a sign of wealth, it doesn't feed anybody. We don't have any gold anyway, so it would be, I wouldn't wouldn't, pardon me, want, I stammer a little bit, I wouldn't want to go on the gold standard since we don't have any.
That would be a big problem there. Maybe we ought to get on. In fact, recently, and I've confirmed this story to be sure it was true, Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul, had actually gone up to Alan Greenspan, chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, who is the architect of the current disaster we're in, and had asked him, and this was about 2 years ago, and said, Mr. Greenspan, in view of what's going on today and your policies here at the Federal Reserve Board, will you disclaim say that what you wrote in 1965 is not true? Now, basically, he was referring to the essay I just wrote, I read, and Alan Greenspan's reply was, I just recently reread that article, and I wouldn't change one word of it.
I agree with you. I think he's doing it on purpose to ruin this country.
I think you may well be right.
I agree with you on many things. I just gold, you know.
Okay, fine. Well, you don't have
I'm going to let someone else chat with you.
Fine. Well, I would suggest that we carry a wonderful book called The New World Order, written by William Still, and he would probably agree with you. He wants to use wood tally sticks. He thinks if we had wood tally sticks, this would be far better. And there are other people, of course, who wanted to use seashells, but you need some means of exchange. I, for one, believe that a gold standard would be better. I don't think we're going to go back to it. I think that there is a plan out there to take us into a cashless society and create chaos. So, anyway, out there in the listening audience, if you agree or disagree, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, Bruce, I am very, very concerned about what lies ahead for our country. Are you? I guess we lost Bruce. Well, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I'm very, very concerned that we're heading into a period of economic chaos. Now, why do I say that? Well, we have tremendous debts in this country. And if you analyze the debts, you know, that we have, that what the government has promised in reference to what the government can provide. And the first thing you have to understand is government doesn't have any money. All it has is what it can take from us by force. And you can't take too much by force. People quit working and quit paying taxes. What you can actually borrow from other countries, but how much can you borrow from other countries? We already think foreigners own about $12 or $13 trillion worth of American assets, and they own well over $2.7 trillion of America's national debt. And so certainly we. Already in a very, very difficult situation at the present time, you know, as far as the monetary system of our government. And if you calculate the figures that I've seen, the government has debts of about 70-some trillion dollars. The federal government, there's just no way they can ever hope to pay those off. That we have a massive trade deficit. We're facing what I believe is a slowing economy. I think we're going to see the contraction of asset value as far as our houses are concerned. But right now we have Michael Trudeau on the line. Hi, Michael. How are you tonight?
I'm wonderful, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Well, we've just been discussing what's going on. We had some young man call in. He doesn't think that the gold is of any value. He says, after all, when the economy collapses, why, how are you going to get any food if all you've got is gold? You can't eat gold. And how would you reply to somebody like that?
Well, I mean, in respect to what he said, he's got a very valid point. The most valuable thing in any kind of an economy, whether it be a great economy or a poor economy, is food. And he brings up that aspect of, you know, the most important thing there will be is food and water. And will I be able to eat my gold or drink my gold? The question is no. But there's a little bit more of an expanded answer on that as well.
All right, fine. Well, we'll let you expand on that in just a minute when we get back here at Radio Liberty. But I think that people, certainly my personal feeling is we make all of our preparations. In the final analysis, we're going to have to put our confidence in the Lord, because I don't think that we're going to get through this otherwise. But I think that we would be foolish not to prepare for the difficult times that lie ahead. Because I think we're going to see a contracting economy. I think that the coming energy crunch is going to be one of the major things that's going to bring that on. And we'll be back in just a moment with Michael Trudeau and get his thoughts on what's going on today. Well, Michael, why don't you just pick up the story and develop the ideas?
Well, the caller had made the comment that, you know, what good is gold going to do if I, you know, don't have any food? How do I get food? You know, I can't eat my gold. And the question would come down right now to, what do you do right now to get your food? Obviously, you're not walking to the grocery store and just helping yourself to a grocery cart full of food and walking out and loading up the car. You're paying for this somehow, and currently the way you're paying for it is with United States Federal Reserve notes, if you will. And the aspect, of course, looking ahead is, if the Federal Reserve notes were worth nothing more than the paper they were printed on, which happens to be the case, it's a simple matter of when we all wake up and realize that this is the actual case, what then will you use for groceries? If the dollar is not accepted at the grocery store or anywhere else you go because it's worthless, what will you use to exchange for your food or any other goods and services? And that, of course, is where we would make the recommendation that gold ownership would be prudent. The reason, of course, is because when we look backwards, gold has a 5,000-year track record. 50 straight centuries, this metal has been used as a money and has been accepted by all of the people of the world. So when we look ahead and say, well, what would be the most likely thing that we would own that would be accepted as a money in the future, of course, we can take the risk, if you will, and say that gambling, you know, on gold would probably be a pretty good gamble. I think that when we look at the emperors and the empires that have come and gone, they've all tried to control everything. They've all tried to control the power. They've all tried to control the money. But when it really boiled on down to it, they are no longer with us, but the gold still is. So looking again forward as to what might make sense in that type of a scenario, I would look forward and say gold would be a wonderful thing to own for goods and services bartering. And again, I know that somebody will, anywhere on this planet, I think somebody would be willing to exchange their food or their goods and services for my gold coins faster than certainly for my U.S. dollar.
Well, I'm very much afraid that the value of the dollar is going to progressively decline. Now, what's the most amazing thing is that the value of the dollar has really been going up over this last 3 or 4 months. Why in heaven's name would the value of the dollar be going up when certainly we have these massive trade deficits and massive, you know, federal deficits? Why has the dollar been going up?
Dollar has been going up because of the interest rates. What you're seeing now, of course, is this plunge protection team, and I, you know, you'll hear that phrase a lot. Generally, what we're talking about when we say, when you hear, or when you somebody says the plunge protection team, we're talking about the Federal Reserve stepping in and taking action one way or the other. They're either manipulating the stock market, they're manipulating what's going on with the money supply, or so on. And again, when we look at why you're seeing this happening right now, it's a simple matter of the Fed aggressively raising interest rates, and they really have no option other than to do that. If they don't raise interest rates, what you're seeing immediately now is the nations that are currently holding our debt losing the confidence by saying, hey, this dollar is collapsing, it's getting weaker and weaker, and we're not going to continue to hold that debt. So the Fed steps in and says, well, we've got to do something to control this, so we now must raise these rates aggressively. Remembering that when they went into this rate decline and they brought the rates down to, you know, the lowest point in my entire lifetime, at that point, basically what they did was they let the dollar go into a free fall. And they, at that point, really felt that they had no choice, probably, or as far as the way they want to control things in a day, it made the best sense to them. And now what they're doing is you're seeing them try to put the skids back on that dollar slide. And it's very interesting to watch them do that, because this is something they were very good at, but now you've got a lot of variables that are coming in here. Gold has been allowed to freely roam again, so to speak. In other words, the central banks aren't manipulating the
price. Hold that thought right there, Michael.
Sure.
Just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Michael Trudeau, and Michael is saying that, you know, that certainly the value of the dollar had fallen as the certainly as we were lowering interest rates. Now that the interest rates are going back up again, why the dollar seems to be strengthening even more. And certainly, you pick up the story there, Michael.
Well, that's correct that the dollar is strengthening because of that. However, it is going to be a short-term strengthening, if you will. The bottom line is that there's nothing there to prop up the dollar. As you pointed out earlier in the program, as I was coming on, that, you know, this nation's in debt. So we're not talking about I've got all these assets that I can prop up and base against this dollar. The government is going to have to step in and do something very dramatic and very drastic if they're to save the dollar, so to speak. And I think that at this point, anything that they try to do with any type of manipulation is going to cause catastrophic economic collapse somewhere else in the economy. you look at that real estate market, and you know, the housing starts posted nice gains for August, but they posted terrible gains for, you know, June and July. But looking again at what the real problem is with that housing market, and people are saying, oh, the housing market's cruising along and it's getting stronger and stronger, that's absolutely not true, and it will fail. And ultimately, it has to fail. Real estate really is facing a kind of a triple threat, if you will, one being credit quality. The credit quality of the new mortgages, and you and I, Stan, have talked about this many times, in the United States has declined dramatically in recent months, and the reason is because the value of some of subprime loans included in mortgage-backed assets doubled in the past 2 years, and according to the Wall Street Journal, loans without full documentation of the borrower's income and assets, which basically is the most risky type of loan, is now accounting for 70% of mortgage securities rated by Standard and Poor's in the first half of the year. Second of the three threats is the rising mortgage rates, and again, this is something that we're touching on right now. As the credit quality continues to decline, investors might start to ask for higher rates of return to compensate for the increase in risk, and you know that would basically push up mortgage interest rates again. Surge in variable rate mortgages means that the U.S. real estate market is now very sensitive to a rise in mortgage rates. Again, as we've talked many times, you're on these variable arms or these floating arms of these interest-only loans, and you start to see those mortgage rates rise a bit, and that starts to push these people out of the market. Literally, they have to basically walk away from their homes. Third one of the threats here basically is reduced investor demand. If mortgage rates continue to rise, borrowers will find that they're unable to make their mortgage payments on variable rate loans, as I've just touched on. Higher mortgage rates will very likely also mean lower real estate prices. So there's a reasonable probability that borrowers in trouble will not be able to sell their homes for enough to cover the mortgages. Real estate taxes and broker commissions mean that even if real estate prices don't decline, a seller would need to sell his home for about probably 10% more than what he purchased it for just to break even. So again, what we're watching here is these people are not going to be able to make those payments. And when they cannot pay those mortgages any longer and aren't able to sell their homes for more than their mortgage debt, they will merely hand the keys to the banks. Problem with that is now the banks aren't making the money. So again, we have this vicious circle cycle that's now in full swing, and really we can't get out of this. A slowdown in the real estate market can have pretty dire consequences for the economy when we look at this overall, and of course the U.S. dollar. The question is only how soon it will happen and how dire. When we look to how bad this is, the hotter areas of the Florida market are 69% overvalued, and the hotter areas of California are 68% overvalued. And I bring those two into the picture simply because they're the top two markets as far as real estate right now. So this is not an easy problem that we're just going to see fade away into the woodwork as the economy, you know, sort of evens itself out here. We're in dire, dire shape.
And I think what people have to understand is what has happened is the price of houses have gone up with no basis at all for the increase in the value of the asset. And Alan Greenspan brings that out very, very clearly in his speech he gave at Jackson Hole, Wyoming about three or four weeks ago when he said, you know, these false assets, there is nothing behind them. There is no increase in production. There's just increase of value of an asset. But as those begin to contract, and as the value of these assets, it'll begin to contract, there are going to be some very dire consequences. And then he made a fascinating statement. He said, you know, we're really in a situation that has never been evaluated before. This is sort of an unknown situation, untried waters, words to that effect. In other words, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. You know, as we go from where we are today, as we try then to try to correct this, there is no precedent that we have to guide the economy. And he is very, very pessimistic. You read the between the lines of that speech, and I know you have, Michael. What were your thoughts on Alan Greenspan's remarks there at Jackson Hole, Wyoming?
Well, boy, you know, it's just so ugly to read something like that when you've got the guy who's heading the Federal Reserve saying the words, hey, look, paper's not a good idea. It's a risky investment right now, and you could see the value evaporate right before your eyes. And when you hear the head of the Federal Reserve making that statement, it really does. And, you know, as you pointed out, reading between the lines, you almost don't have to read between the lines because he came right out and said it.
We're going to be back here in just a moment with Michael Trudeau from Colonial Resources. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening, Michael Trudeau. And, of course, we're talking about really what's happening to the economy. Well, massive trade deficits, massive federal deficit, and in the face of a massive federal deficit that was going to be in the neighborhood of about $330 billion, ignoring what we're spending for the war in Iraq, suddenly we've taken on an additional $200 billion, that they've already appropriated to over $67 or $68 billion to rebuild New Orleans. They're talking about $200 billion of federal funds to rebuild New Orleans. What impact is that going to have on the situation, Michael?
Well, you bring up a great point, because when I keep hearing that number of the $200 billion, because it's being tossed around that that's what this will cost for just Katrina alone, now they're talking, I suppose, about another $7 to $10 to $15 billion for Rita. But when we look at this federal deficit of $300+ billion, you start to actually ask yourself, what will an impact of $200 additional billion of debt do? Well, when we look at what the dollar is currently worth, and now you basically what you're doing is infusing another $200 billion into the system, you're going to see an all-out free fall on that dollar no matter what happens next. You're going to see a weakening of our dollar, and it's going to be dramatic. And when we talk about dramatic, it's really an ugly thing to talk about, because when we look at some of the decline of the buying power over a lifetime of somebody, in 1945 being when it really began its free fall, the dollar's free fall, is, that's basically, I suppose, roughly, I was talking to my mom, it's about her lifetime. She was born in 1943. And, since she's been, just about born, her dollar's been declining all the way through. I was looking at some of the math on this and trying to figure out factoring in some of these dollar differences. In 1980, if I had $100 and I bought, $100 worth of product in 1980, decided I wanted to do it again today, the same product exactly would cost me $237. And that is more than double basically the cost of those goods, not that they've become rarer since 1980, but at least doubling the cost of those goods. Now, since 1980, people have got to actually sit back and go, well, boy, has my salary doubled cost of living? I was talking with a woman just a couple of days ago, and we were talking about this 25% dollar decline. She said, that's not all that bad, because the cost of living has gone up so high. And I said, you really have to factor in something and take a look at the math here, because a 25% decline in your dollar in 2 years would mean basically for you to keep even, you would have had to have received a 25% cost of living raise over the course of 2 years. Now, I know a lot of people who work for a lot of companies. I've never heard anybody get a 25% cost of living raise
Hold that thought right there for a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and yes, this evening, Michael Trudeau. We're talking about really what's happening to our country. Additional $200 billion spending to rebuild New Orleans is going to be. And there is no instance in all history where a nation has been able to spend itself into prosperity. During the Vietnam War, Lyndon Johnson didn't want to get the people mad at him, so he wanted to have both guns and butter, a massive federal spending program for Medicare and Medicaid and the new society and all of these wonderful programs he was bringing in, the war on poverty. And, of course, he did it all on borrowed money. In other words, they didn't pay for anything. They simply borrowed it from future generations and began to run up the national debt. And, of course, then by the end of the 1970s, while we were in a massive runaway inflation, and that's when, of course, Paul Volcker stepped in and raised the interest rates over 20% and just threw the economy into a tailspin, but at least he preserved the dollar. Ever since then, why, we've been doing exactly the same thing again, only, of course, with on steroids. And right now, we face a situation that dwarfs what the situation we were in back in late 1979, when, of course, we saw that tremendous run on gold and really of the threatening the very stability of our financial system. Well, before we go on, Michael, I'd like you perhaps to get your telephone number, your website out, so people would know how they could get in touch with you and Colonial Resources. And do you have some material that you would send them if they called you?
Absolutely. There's a few different things we would offer. First off, if folks want to get a pen and just write down the phone number, it's toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. or you can visit the website, and a lot of the material that we talk about on Dr. Stan's show is also posted right there for your perusal. Download these articles that we talk about on the program and pass those around. Use them to educate your friends and family members. And the website is colonialresources.com. One of the things I would like people to ask for specifically, because and I think this is one of the easiest ways to wake people up, and when I talk about waking people up, it's like we're talking about your friends, your family members, your neighbors, and the people, when you start talking about what's going on in America for real, and they kind of look at you with that, boy, you know, you're a kook look, this is one of those things that really does wake them up very slowly, but puts them on the right path, which is an article that we have entitled Who Owns the Federal Reserve, and basically what is the Federal Reserve fraud. Talks about the families who own the Federal Reserve, talks about how it's not owned by the government, how it's not a federal entity, and it's a wonderful starting point for people to get educated on the process of exactly what's going on in this country and who is running the show. So if folks want to ask for the article on Who Owns the Federal Reserve, we'll pass that out for free. And of course, we've got other information available on peak oil and the coming cashless society at any time. The number again is 1-800-685-4042 or colonialresources.com.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Paul, who's calling in from Ohio. Hi, Paul. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I had a question, but it wasn't concerning the cholesterol. I missed the dentist on the other program.
Right.
My son wants to get the coating, you know, that coating stuff that you put on, they paint it on the teeth. Is that okay?
Well, that's a little out of my field, but you can call me off the air. Tell you what, I'll have my secretary or our producer get your telephone number, and I'll call you back, okay?
Do you know what time you'll be able to call back?
I'll call you back as soon as we're done here.
Thank you, Dr.
All right, fine, and I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll go ahead and get our producer to get Paul's telephone number so I can call him back as soon as the program's over. But right now, of course, our guest this evening is Michael Trudeau, and we don't want to get into painting things on the teeth. We want to really discuss what's happening financially, because I think that the issue of oil and energy is going to play a tremendous part in what's going on. Now we're seeing $3 a gallon gasoline. But it's not simply the gasoline, it's what's happening to the price of diesel. It's what's going to happen to the price of heating oil this winter. It's what's going to happen to the price of natural gas, because, of course, a certain percentage of the natural gas production is going to be pretty well closed down there in the Gulf, at least for some time. And then, of course, what the impact of the rising cost of energy and the rising cost of all the things that are produced by petroleum, whether it be asphalt or whether it be drugs or whether it be soap or whether it be paint or whether plastics, almost everything we produce today in one way or another is related to petroleum. It drives our airplanes, it drives our cars, it drives our locomotives, it drives our certainly our cars. And really, as more and more money is going for petroleum and petroleum products, will people have the money to spend on other things, and how will that begin to impact on our economy, Michael?
Well, again, same thing. You know, it's when I'm watching the price of all of these commodities going up, doesn't matter what it is, it's attached to oil. If I'm seeing the price of oil rising, which, I mean, obviously we go back just about, you know, a year ago, and it was $45 a barrel, and today it's, what, $65 a barrel. So obviously if we just do the math based on that alone, we're looking at a pretty dramatic increase on the price of a barrel of oil. So when we do that percentage increase, I can also equate that to the percentage of increase on just about everything else there is, because it's all, as you pointed out, manufactured using oil or transported using oil or a million connections to the oil. And again, it's going, how it, you know, impacts the economy is very simple, because again, I am going to say I'm not going to be making a cost of living raise that's going to be, you know, that type of a percentage rate, 25% in 2 years, because that's about the rate of decline in the dollar, and a lot of that is connected to, you know, to the oil. Part of the thing that we look at is when we look at that real estate market, and we look at the price of oil, we look at anything, you can look at it in terms of the fact that it's the weakening dollar. I had an individual who had called me and asked specifically about the housing market, whether or not they should, that I thought that that would be a good investment, seeing that in the last 5 years, the rate of houses, you know, price of houses have gone up about 50% on average. And I pointed out at that point that the reason that the housing market, if you will, you're looking at that increase of a 50% on average, is because that's about the same decline that your dollar has had. So it now takes that many more of the weaker dollars to buy the house or to buy, you know, the loaf of bread or to buy anything. So basically what we're looking at is a weakening dollar. And, of course, as the price of oil goes up based on the shortage or based on the fact that we have an increasing demand for cheap oil and the production is going down, that'll only exacerbate the situation dramatically.
Well, I just don't think there's going to be enough money for people to have to spend on a lot of things they have before. If they're commuting to work, they're going to be putting, you know, out twice as much money for the gasoline. And certainly everything that it has to be shipped in the way of trucking, the price of that is going to go up. And in fact, some of the truckers are even talking about maybe just parking their trucks. They're not going to be able to pay the increased fuel costs. And, you know, I think although we may get a slight drop here, you know, when the smoke clears as far as New Orleans is concerned, I don't see anything that's going to stop the price of oil from going up, you know, within the next couple of years to $100 a barrel. I really think they're going to be, whether peak oil is real or whether it's not real, doesn't really matter. There's going to be shortages of oil.
I can't agree more. And again, it doesn't matter, right, as you point out, whether it's real or perceived, it's going to be a shortage in my neighborhood. It's going to be a shortage in my gas tank. And I think that we're going to see an exodus in reverse. Right now, in recent terms, we've seen people leaving the cities en masse. And they're leaving the cities for the suburbs and for the rural areas. Problem, as you pointed out again, is that nobody's going to be able to afford the gas. So one of two things will have to happen. Either people will begin to telecommute and work from home, or they're going to have to reverse this trend and begin moving back into the cities so they can afford the gasoline in order to get to and from work. And, you know, the question is, how do I offset this? How do I protect myself? How do I stop this from happening to myself? If, for instance, if last year at this point oil was $44 a barrel, and I knew that 1 year from now it would be $65 a barrel, and I wanted to be able to afford the same amount of oil or the same amount of gasoline with what I'm currently making, how would I have protected my money? Well, if I would have put it in gold at this exact time and liquidated today, I would have enough increase in the, you know, weakened dollars that I could afford the same amount of gasoline as I could last year. So I haven't lost anything. I didn't gain anything, but I haven't lost anything. So again, looking forward now, if I assume that by this time next year we've got oil at $85 a barrel, and I still want to be able to afford the same amount of gasoline I can this year, I better start looking at my gas money and protecting that with something that will not lose its value like gold.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I went down and filled up my gas tank the other day, and I have an old Suburban. We don't drive it, fortunately, very much, but it's wonderful for hauling or for taking large groups of people. I filled up my tank. It was $94. Oh. I just couldn't believe it. Well, let's go to Jim, who's calling us from Arizona. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Very good. How are you, Doctor?
I'm doing fine. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I'm only an electrical engineer and not a doctor, but I've been a heart patient for several years, and I used to be kind of associated with the medical field. And I have my own little hypothesis about this, and I'd like to run it by.
No, wait a minute. Are you calling about something financial, or just talking on heart conditions?
Oh, about the. I want to know about these cholesterol.
That is another program altogether. And you want information on that? Why I suggest that you get in touch with us and get our material on the statin drugs. But that's a little. Right now, of course, we're talking about financial matters, Jim. And I don't want to get off onto the discussion of the statin drugs. But if you'd like to know about that, we have a great four-tape set on the statin drugs. We've got a great book called The Statin Drugs by Shane Ellison. You'll be shocked when you read it. And then, of course, just simply ask for the Crestor reference from the PDR, Physician's Desk reference. What do the manufacturers of Crestor really say about its impact on cardiac morbidity and cardiac mortality? Just give us a call, get that, and we'll send that to you free of charge.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, I don't want to get off the subject. I really want to stick on the subject. And please, if you do call in on the subject, not to try to change the subject, because we have with us Michael Trudeau from Colonial Resources. We're talking about what I really feel is the turning point in our economy. Now, I can be wrong. I am not a clairvoyant. I'm not a financial analyst, but my intelligence tells me we've been running up the economy artificially for a long period of time with a plunge protection team going in and stabilizing the stock market so it did not fall. Although they usually, of course, manipulate primarily the Dow Jones average, because that is a matter of perception. That's what we look at, and we think that reflects what's happening in the economy. The truth of the matter is that, you know, our economy is not that good. Certainly, many of our corporations are making a lot of money, but they're not making it here in the United States. They're making it on their factories over in China. And what's happening to our manufacturing base? What's happening to our job base? What's really happening as we simply send our money throughout the world in one form or another in the way of foreign aid or loans to other developing countries is only going to inherently weaken the stability of our economic system. Would you agree or disagree with that, Michael?
Agree with it 100%. I mean, there's no question about it. And when you mentioned the stock market, I had another individual who had asked me about, you know, how well the stock market had done over the year compared to gold, but, you know, you'd have made more money in stocks. And I said, well, yeah, I suppose if you picked a specific stock, you might have an argument with me one way or the other. But the stock market since January doesn't bear that out. Stock market since January was around, I think in January, 10,900, somewhere right around there. And today it's 10,500, 10,600, floating around that rate. That does not factor in, of course, the decline in the dollar's purchasing power since January. That's just the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So the guys who are doing, you know, that job of propping up the Dow Jones numbers aren't doing a very good job currently. And, of course, now we're heading into October, definitely not a friendly month for the Dow Jones Industrial Averages. In the last 30 days, gold has come up 6%. In the last year, we're looking at about 14%. So, again, you ask yourself the question, well, where would I put my money if I had money to stash somewhere and didn't want it to be eaten up or I wanted to make any money one way or the other? Certainly wouldn't be the Dow Jones. It's down since January. In the same one-year period of time, we've got gold up about 14%. And Pierre Lassonde, who's the president of Newmont Mining, the world's largest gold producer, recently came out and said, here's what he said, when you look at the amount of money that has been created, what I see is a gold price that will have three zeros after the first number, but I don't know what that first number is going to be. Yes, over $1,000. It's going to be in the next year or two. I don't think so. I think it's going to be in the next five to eight bull market years. That we will have in front of us. So the place to be over the next 5 to 8 years is hard assets. That's what it is, gold.
Well, I think one of the greatest lies that's being told to the American people is the fact that we have low inflation. I mean, we've got 2% or now maybe they'll even concede 3% inflation, and yet look at what's happening to the price of energy. How do they get around it? They just lie. Look at the price of food. I mean, look at the price of housing. Look at the price of health care. Are you going to believe what the government tells you, or are you going to believe your lying eyes?
All right.
Well, I would suggest that you use your basic intelligence and realize they're not telling us the truth. They don't tell us the truth about so many things, and they're certainly not telling us the truth about what's happening to the economy. But I think we only need to do and watch and see what certainly Warren Buffett and what Bill Gates and what George Soros and what the other really smart people are doing. And they're not investing in the dollar and dollar increments at all. They're investing overseas. Warren Buffett is shorted the American dollar. He lost $300 million shorting the American dollar last year. He's got $20 billion that's still short on the dollar, expecting it to fall. It's going to be interesting to see if Warren Buffett has made a terrible error or one of the greatest moves of all time. I think he's a lot smarter than I am, that's for certain.
And I think that, you know, when we look at the people who are in the know, the smart money, you mentioned Bill Gates. Well, Bill Gates has been just absolutely hoarding metals. Here's a guy who has been going into metals very heavily. Certainly Warren has as well, but when we look at Bill Gates moving into metals, he's moving into metals at a rate that is really actually almost amusing, because it seems like it should be in the newspaper every day to talk about the volumes of dollars that this guy is moving into metals markets. Now, I think that it might be a shorter term play as well, because almost everybody out there, even the people who would be, you know, what you'd look at as bears, traditional bears, when it comes to talking about the gold market, they're all predicting gold over 500 by January. We're talking about people like J.P. Morgan. We're talking about Citigroup. We're talking about Prudential. We're talking about the general norm of the people who would be very bearish when it comes to precious metals. But, of course, they don't want to look bad. And at this point, you've got the flow, if you will, heading in the favor of gold. They have to come out and make statements at this point, or they're going to look like, you know, they knew nothing or did nothing while they sat by on the sidelines rather than recommending you get into gold.
Well, I think that we can remember it was a little about a year and a half ago when Stephen Rhodes, a senior economist from Morgan Stanley at a private meeting, said that he thought there was a 90% chance of a financial Armageddon. I think that was his word, financial Armageddon. Maybe a 10% chance we'd be able to muddle through this. But, you know, Stephen Roach is one of the best economists that we have in the world today. We know that the Chinese people are buying gold. Now they can buy it. They can hold it. And they're not spending their money. They're saving it. We know the Japanese people are of course, investing in gold. And they're not spending their money. They're saving it. We know that increasingly, why the productive things, factories are moving to China, they're moving to India. So many of our jobs are being outsourced to India. And what are the people doing with their newfound money? They're not spending it. Why, they're moving it into gold and into silver. So, you know, people throughout the world don't have the faith in paper money that most people here in America do. You know, the average American thinks, oh, you know, the good times are going to keep rolling. But I think that people who live in other countries where they've had real want and hunger and tragedy understand that you're going to have to look out after yourself. You can't look to the government to provide for you. We'll be back in just a minute to wrap up the program here with Michael Trudeau. Well, Michael, why don't you, we've got 3 minutes here for you to wrap up the program.
Sure. You'd mentioned in the beginning of the program that the natural gas and home heating oil prices would be going up. And that's just absolutely obvious. One of the massive problems that we have is with the natural gas in decline as well. Like peak oil, we also have a peak on natural gas. And these guys are punching holes in the ground faster than you can, you know, blink, trying to look for new pockets, and they're not hitting anything. So we are coming up short with natural gas. I think that if we see any type of a winter that would be what you would call a below-average temperature winter, we're going to have a massive problem with natural gas and home heating costs. And, of course, that's going to impact the individuals, but it will also impact the economy. Last thing I want to touch on is the, you know, all these people making these bold predictions about gold breaking through 500. I don't think it's much of a prediction. I think it's an absolute, you know, gimme, if you will. When we look at what's going on here, we have a basically, you know, the appeal of the safe haven investment with gold, which is very large, coupled now with a record low gold production. South Africa only produced 342 tons last year. That amount was not recorded since 1931. And again, they're telling us that this year they plan to produce below 300 tons. So we have an actual shortage developing of gold while demand is increasing dramatically. So it's a matter of, generally speaking, you will always protect your dollars by owning gold. Right now, I think you're going to see an opportunity just like you did in 1980 where there's going to be a flood of people rushing into gold, and that will inflate the gold price very rapidly, and there will actually be some real profits to be taken from that gold market. I think that it makes better sense, though, to always be looking at gold as a measure of protection. If you'd like further information on that or information to be sent out on the Federal Reserve or on peak oil, we would handily do that. The toll-free number to call is 1-800-685-4042 or visit colonialresources.com.
One more time, get that telephone number out.
Sure, the number is 1-800-685-4042. And feel free to call and ask, you know, if you're interested in purchasing precious metals, what types, how to do it, and what the easiest ways to go about it are.
All right, fine. Well, our guest this evening has been Michael Trudeau, and of course we've been covering what's really happening in the economy. And, you know, is there any way to protect yourself? Well, you should do everything that's intelligent. You should know the history, really, of what's happened in the past, and then try to make your decisions intelligently. But, of course, we're going to have to look after ourselves. Michael, it's been a real pleasure having you here again on Radio Liberty. Thank you so very much for being
Always
with us.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, I guess was Michael Trudeau, and I want you to know that certainly Michael is and Colonial Resources does support my ministry here at Radio Liberty. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was just saying that the Colonial Resources does help keep Radio Liberty on the air, and this is the time when I really need to mention to our listeners that Radio Liberty, though, is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent on those of you who listen to our program to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours a day, trying to get people to understand that most of what they get through the regular media just is not true. And so we try to bring you the alternative sources of information. The first hour, of course, we talked about how they're poisoning the American people with mercury. And other times we'll tell you how they're poisoning us with fluoride and with statin drugs and certainly with aspartame and MSG. And all of these stories sound so incredible. And yet, of course, if you understand that there really is a genocidal program, then everything makes sense. If you have not read the National Security Study Memorandum, an official government publication, 1974, it's up on the Internet, or, of course, it is available through Radio Liberty. Our video on None Dare Call It Genocide, I think, gives you an overall understanding of what's really going on in the world today. You go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, that's RadioLiberty.com, and there you will find our monograph. It's called the Population Control Agenda Monograph, the Population Control Agenda Monograph, and you're certainly welcome to pull that down and copy it. Of course, if you'd like a free copy of it, why, you could give us a call and at 1-800-544-8927. We don't ordinarily offer that free, but if you want to get a free copy tonight, why, we'll be glad to provide that for you. And we, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, it's really understand how this all fits together. Because, of course, we haven't talked very much about the spiritual aspects of what's going on. The fact that there really is, behind the scenes, a people of great wealth and great power who are tied into the other dimension, and there really is a spiritual dimension to the world. This is what the mediums tap into, the spiritualists, the diviners, the soothsayers, the witches, even the Luciferians and Satanists tap into the other dimension. And there really are people in our society who tap into that dimension, and some of them are at the highest levels of our government. And it's not what I say, it's what they say. We do hope that you'll go to our website at www.radioliberty.com and pull down my May and June newsletters on the occult hierarchy, part one and part two. Or if you'd like a free copy of the occult hierarchy part two, you don't have access to the internet, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we'll be glad to send you a free copy of our The Occult Hierarchy Part 2 newsletter. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Remember, we are having our November seminar, our annual November seminar, on the 19th of November this year, right here in the Monterey Bay area. Beautiful place to visit. We're serving lunch. So if you're going to come, you're going to have to give us a call and make a reservation. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.